everybody to Jhana Grove for this 9-day November retreat. It's always interesting for me to sit here and see who's coming in again. I don't know who's on the list, but it's nice to see many old faces and many people who may be here for the first time. But a welcome here to this state-of-the-art retreat centre. For those of you who have been here before, you know there's always improvements every year. Now we have a nice covered walkway from the upper cottages down to the central area, so you don't need to worry if it rains. And the little ramp from the lower cottages up to the kitchen, so you don't have to go all the way around if you're late for lunch or breakfast. And I'm just admiring just the work of a couple of our monks who have continued on these panels here in this hall, which are supposed to improve the sound quality. They absorb sound so that the sound doesn't reflect from the masonry walls. So hopefully the sound quality is much better this year than ever before. So every year we try to do a little bit more, because even the monks love this centre. And it's our centre for the Buddhist Society, everyone who comes here. So I hope you enjoy this place. And it has very wonderful facilities. Each one of you have discovered you have your own ensuite in your room. And there's a reason for that. Sometimes people tell me it's more like a resort than a retreat centre. But I think retreat centres should be like this, so that you can sleep in comfort. You can rest if you... if you need to rest any time of the day. And you also have your own shower and toilet, so you don't need to queue up like I've seen in some other places. So it's a very comfortable place for you here. And in your cottage, there's six people to every cottage. Please try and be quiet in the cottage. So if you need to talk to anybody, please, you know, go away from the cottage, because I will be encouraging everyone, if you want to meditate in your room, in your cottage, it's a very lovely place to meditate in. You don't have to meditate in this hall here, although it's always available for you. Sometimes people prefer meditating in their little room. It's comfortable, there's a toilet close by, and you can adjust the temperature. If it gets too hot, opening a window. If it gets too cool, turning on a heater. You find it's much easier for you to adjust the temperature. Here is an average temperature. We have got the air con. If it gets too hot, we can turn it on. If we get too cold, we can do it reverse cycle. But what happens? For some people it's cool, for some people it's hot, and you can never please everybody. But in your room, you can actually please yourself. So you're most welcome to meditate in your room if you find that more comfortable and also more peaceful. But that would mean that other people in your cottage also walk into that cottage, walk out again, quietly. Now that's not just out of compassion and kindness for the other people in the cottage. It's also a wonderful practice for you of mindfulness and compassion, what we call kindfulness. Joining together those two amazing qualities in Buddhism, mindfulness and kindness, into kindfulness. So what the kindfulness means is when you have to go back into the cottage, always remember there may be somebody there who's either resting, sleeping, or meditating. So try and enter the cottage quietly and just move quietly and open the door quietly. And even if you need to make yourself a cup of tea, do it as quietly as you can, instead of getting the spoon ding, 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 as you make more noise than Big Ben in London, trying to stir your tea up. So try and do it as quietly as possible. And you can do that. We always mention, I heard this a long time ago from one teacher, he called this burglar mindfulness. Because a burglar going into somebody's house can move so quietly, the owners of the house, the occupants, don't even know the burglar's inside the house. And they can go in there and come out again so easily without disturbing anything. They do that because they know if they make the slightest noise, they will be caught and sent to jail. It reminds me of a story which somebody handed to me recently, and I read this out this morning at the Dharana, made people laugh. It's actually a true story. This guy in Kansas, he went to his local bank, and he handed the cashier a note which read, "I have a gun, give me the contents of your cash, I register the drawer." So the cashier had no choice but to hand him around $3,000, and then he took the money and went into the lobby of the bank, where he just sat down on a chair. He didn't try and escape. A short time later, the security guard came over, and he said, "Yes, I'm the man you're looking for." And they arrested him. And at his court case, he said, "Yes, just as I told my wife this morning, an hour before I went to the bank, I'd rather be in prison than live at home with you." And the judge was very mean. He sent him back home. And that was his punishment. Stories like that. It's just so weird. Only happened in the United States. But it was very funny. So, but if you really do the burglar method of kindfulness, it means that people can't hear you when you go into the room. Now, not only is that compassion for the other people there, it also means you have to be a little bit more restrained and a bit more circumspect with how you're moving. It's a basic exercise in mindfulness in the way you move. So you're actually aware it's important what you're doing. And of course, that is a great support for your meditation practice. It's not just that your meditation is on the cushion or the chair, and when you go back into your room, okay, it's over now, I can do whatever I like. No, please carry on the meditation by being calm and peaceful, so no one even knows that you're coming in and going out, you know, in your own rooms. And that is a great exercise for you. So you can meditate in your own rooms if you wish, or you can meditate in this hall here. Or for those of you who've been here before, you know that just a 15-minute walk away is the monastery where the monks are, and there is also the hall at Bodhinyana Monastery, which many people like meditating in during these retreats, and you're most welcome to, as long as it's not being used by the monks for other purposes, you're most welcome to meditate in there, because that has got very beautiful energy in there. So all these places are there for you to meditate in. I say it has very good energy because I've noticed this in all the years I've been a monk. There are some places which have really, really strong energy and some which have very bad energy. And I remember I was editing a book just a couple of days ago, and one of the stories that when I first went to India on pilgrimage, you know, with a group from the Buddhist Society in Western Australia. That was before they had the airport at Bodh Gaya, close by anyway. So that we landed in Kathmandu, and because there was not just monks on the pilgrimage, they decided to have a tour around Kathmandu. And there's nothing really, there's a couple of Buddhist places there, but mostly it was just shopping. And I was getting bored as the guide was taking me through this palace complex. And being a bit rebellious monk, instead of following the guide and listen to what he was saying, I decided to branch off by myself and explore, not too far away. And I went through this gateway into this courtyard in one of these old palaces. No, I just wanted to have a look, see what was in there. And as soon as I got into that palace, or that courtyard, it was some of the worst energy I've ever felt in my life. It was just so dark, so black, so oppressive, and I just wanted to go out. And it was strange, because I never expected that. I thought it'd be just a courtyard, just like everything else. So I asked the guide afterwards, what was that place? You know what that place was? That was the place in the palace where, when the, Kathmandu had its kings, they would every year slaughter many animals as a sacrifice. And it was in that courtyard they did that. And the energy there was just so dark and evil and bad, and the last place you would like to meditate. And other places have got incredible energy. And places like, you know, my favorite place on pilgrimage is the Vulture's Peak. And there it's just such beauty. That's where the Buddha stayed for a long, long time, meditating in the caves, living very simply. And I love that place. You sit down there and you get peaceful so quickly. So the meditation is not just, you know, your own abilities. It's sometimes what we call supporting conditions as well. If those supporting conditions are favorable, it's easier for you. So Bodhidharma Monastery has got huge energy in that hall because we've been there over 30 years and we get some great meditations, and great monks and nuns have been in that hall. So it builds up energy over the years. This place here, this hall, is now starting to get some energy up. People can feel that. Even here you get some pretty good meditation. So there are places you can feel. You don't need to be psychic or anything. You just feel this is a really nice place. And you find it's easy to meditate. And this place is building up energy because this is basically all we use it for, just for meditation. One ceremony a year, I could attend a ceremony. Other than that, it's a meditation center. So it builds up the energy after such a long time. So please make use of that. Don't just think you have to sit here. Try other places if necessary. Sitting in the forest sounds very romantic, but there are lots of flies and ants and all sorts of other creepy crawlies in the forest. So there is a reason why in the bush people usually build buildings or huts, because that place belongs to the creepy crawlies and this place belongs to us. If you don't mind those creepy crawlies, fine. It's great to have a walk, but sitting out there, I'm not quite sure that's a good idea. But it's up to you. So have these places where you can find some peace. And we always try to make this a quieter, more convenient place every year. And also that you don't always have to sit on the floor. I have to keep repeating this because some people think meditation happens on the floor and only namby-pamby cream puffs sit on chairs. They're not the real meditators. They're not going to get enlightened. Only the tough people who sit on the floor. We are the real meditators, not like these others. But of course, that is just so much. I'll introduce this word now, so I don't have to introduce it again. It's the word called Gomayang. Many of you know, because I use that word very often during meditation retreats, it's a Pali word. Pali was the language of Theravada Buddhism. And go means bull, the female bovine. Go means bull. And Mayang means what comes out of the back end of a bull. So go Mayang, I'll only say it once, bullshit. And now you always know, whenever I say go Mayang, you know what that word means. So there's a lot of go Mayang to say that you have to sit on the floor to get enlightened or to get deep meditation. You can get deep meditation sitting on a chair if you really wish. And it's actually quite useful to learn meditation in both postures, sitting on the ground, if you possibly can, and sitting on a chair. I know that because recently I went over to London to teach a retreat, and that's about a 13-hour plane ride from Singapore to London and back. So it was really helpful I could meditate on a chair, because the flight attendants wouldn't allow me to go into the aisle and cross my legs and sit on the floor. So the only place I could go was actually on the chair. So it's very helpful. And it's also later on you may injure your back or your legs or whatever. So it's helpful to learn to meditate on a couple of postures, such as on a chair as well as on the floor. But if you do meditate on the floor, you can. Many people have got these stools, which is wonderful. You can see that we have a whole heap of cushions and stools just in the lobby of this hall so that you can be comfortable. And you can see that some people put a cushion under here and a cushion under there and a cushion under somewhere else. That's wonderful. Please do that. Because one of the supporting conditions is that your body is comfortable and relaxed. Now, this is not a Guantanamo Bay. This is not a boot camp. This is Jhana Grove, which is looking after your body and looking after your mind. So it's called the middle way in Buddhism, avoiding extremes. This is not indulgence. This is actually just that right amount of comfort so that you can develop the Eightfold Path and especially deep meditation. Of course, it's very difficult actually to find just that right amount of comfort and the right amount of little bit of endurance, just to find that sweet spot of the Eightfold Path. But please trust me, I've been a teacher for many, many years, as well as practicing for many, many years. So I have a good wisdom on what that sweet spot is. I have been to many monasteries where it's really tough. And so tough, I've seen that people just... I just remember one poor monk in Thailand that he had total culture shock in a place. There was no chairs. He didn't understand the food or the language or the culture at all. He went a bit crazy. It was too tough for him. And I've seen other people. One of the monks I know, I love telling you this story, he decided to go for bus one evening, meditating most of the night. And when his knees started to hurt, he said, "No, I'm a monk. I am going to endure." And they hurt even more. "No, I am going to not move." Because he remembered something the Buddha said. That when he sat under the Bodhi tree, apparently, before he became enlightened, he reportedly said, "I will not move from this spot until my blood dries up and my bones turn to dust, or I get enlightened," whichever happens first. It was enlightenment or bust. And so this monk read that and decided to try the same. Only, you know, there's not that many people who become Buddhas who actually get enlightened. Most people bust. And he was one of the ones who busted. We had to take him to the hospital the next day to get a double knee reconstruction. So please don't do that. You know, experiences like that told me that there's too much force, too much toughness doesn't get you anywhere except to the hospital. So we make this just the right amount of middle way so you feel comfortable and peaceful. So you cannot have to worry about your body. The body can be relaxed and at ease with no aches and pains, not much to deal with. And then once we have a comfortable place, good energy, then it becomes up to you. Or is it really up to you? Many times I thought that I was in control of my meditation. And when you have the teachings of non-self, that was a bit of a contradiction. How come I'm in control of my meditation when there's not supposed to be anybody in there who does control? And I soon worked out that it wasn't me who was meditating. I was totally brainwashed by my teacher, Ajahn Chah. He brainwashed me. He was actually doing the meditation for me. And unfortunately, I warn you, that's what's going to happen to you. It's me who's going to be meditating for you. All these little talks and these little tricks and sayings, they get inside of you. And that is actually what makes the mind peaceful and calm. So it's really not up to you. It's more, you're on this journey. Just like, again, going overseas. And whenever I'm traveling, I actually realize I don't travel at all. Even going from Perth to London and London back to Perth again, I didn't move. I just sat in my seat. The plane did all the moving, not me. You see the perspective, you can change perspective so easily, and that's what it felt like. I was just sitting perfectly still in my seat. I wasn't going anywhere. The plane was doing the moving, so I never traveled anywhere. I was still. So it's interesting that this is something which we can do here. You're not really going anywhere. Sit still and just allow this journey of meditation just to take you where it needs to go. Don't need to be the pilot. Be the passenger. And you'll hear me say that many, many times. Be a passenger of your meditation, not a pilot. Just let go. And then you find peace and happiness happens. So many of you have been on my meditation retreats before. You know exactly just how they run. There's a lot of letting go, a lot of non-striving. So it's not just doing nothing. It's not doing something. It's nothing doing. In other words, you're just totally letting go and allowing this mind to become peaceful all by itself. This is the basic teaching of meditation. And in order to understand that, something which, again, to Ajahn Chah's teaching, he would say many, many times, number one, this is just to get the ground of this retreat all settled quite clearly from the beginning. You're meditating here not to get something, but to let things go. So not to attain things. That's what you do in the world. This is to let go of things, not to amass more attainments, like more possessions, only not material possessions, but spiritual possessions, not to attain things, but to abandon things. See how much you can let go on this retreat. So if you come here with a goal, what you want to attain, what you want to reach, what you want to get, please forget it. The goals will only make you more stressful. And this is important to understand because many people come on these retreats and have all sorts of different aspirations for the retreat. Some people come on the retreat because they're sick and they want to get some relief, you know, from their illnesses or cancers. And some people come on this because they just need a break from the office or from the family. And some people are coming on this retreat for years and years, you know, trying to get enlightened. And I keep seeing them come back every year, and they're still not enlightened. What's going on is because that's what they're coming here from, the wrong motivation. So whatever motivation you're here for, please don't bring it into this hall. Leave it outside with your shoes. So you're here just to be, not to get somewhere. To relax, not to stress yourself out. And not to aspire to things you don't really understand what they are. It was always a weird experience to see people wanting to become enlightened when they had no idea what enlightenment was. To me, it was like getting on a bus, not knowing the destination of the bus, whether it be someplace you'd want to be or not want to be. And so, unless one has a very clear understanding by experience what enlightenment is, it's a waste of time aspiring for it. You don't know what you're wanting or what you're aspiring towards. However, you all have some idea what peace means, what kindness means, what stillness means, what freedom means. So if you're going to aspire for any goal on this retreat, make those things your goal. Things which you know where you're going to go, what it's going to be like when you get there. Peace. So meditate not to become concentrated or to see lights or to get jhanas. Meditate for just to be peaceful. Now you can do that much better than if you're trying to get somewhere where you don't know where you're trying to be. What makes you peaceful? What makes you agitated? And be aware of that. Very recently, the last year or so, because I always like to change the meditation a little bit every year. Not that much, because there's only so much you can innovate, because this meditation is so clear and so precise. But one of the things I was encouraging people to do was to be aware, not of your breath, and not of your body, but of that part of your mind, which I call just peace of mind, or its opposite, how agitated you are. to try and be aware of something which is really, really basic but so important for your meditation. And in order to encourage people to be aware, to be mindful of this thing, peace or agitation inside your mind, I use the technique of asking you to give it a number from 1 to 10. So just indulge me in this moment. Just ask yourself, how peaceful are you or how agitated are you? And give it a number. Number 9 or 10 means you're really agitated. Number 1 means you're really peaceful. So how peaceful are you? How agitated are you? Give it a number. Once you've given it a number, it's just again one of these skillful means, a trick, to get you to see clearly what I mean by peace of mind or agitation of mind. And once you can actually see that again and again, so you know it very clearly, then it becomes quite clear to you what makes your mind more peaceful and what makes it more agitated. What makes that number go higher, up to a 6, 7, 8, 9? And what makes it go low down to a 4 or a 3 or a 2 or a 1? What makes you more peaceful? What makes you more agitated? And that's an important thing to be mindful of and to be aware of, because then you find all this struggling, this trying, this concentrating, this striving, all that ends up doing is making you more agitated. Whereas kindness, letting things be, embracing, just being still, that brings that number down. You become more and more and more peaceful, which is what this meditation is supposed to be, and supposed to do. To become peaceful, every time you have a goal and you strive towards a goal, that peace indicator goes up to 9 or 10. You're striving, you're struggling. Every time that you get disappointed because you're not achieving your aspirations, again, it goes up again. You're agitated again. But every time you lower your expectations, you don't want anything, just happy to be here, just very joyful being in a retreat where you don't have to do very much, then your peace number goes down to a 2, to a 1. You're going in the correct direction. Now, if you remember that when you're meditating, just remember how peaceful you are, how agitated you are, you will solve many problems in meditation. Number 1, your health problems, which we all have problems with our health because we're all getting old. There's very few 20 to 30-year-olds on this retreat. There are a couple, but most of you are getting on a bit. Most of you are over the hill, and you all know the more you get over the hill, the faster you pick up speed on the way to your coffin. That's just what happens when you go downhill. Go faster, 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 faster. So you'll all have some aches and pains, illnesses somewhere. So that actually is an impediment to meditation sometimes. So just this relaxing the body, relaxing the mind, has a huge effect on your health. Even recently, I'm sure that Ajahn Brahmani won't mind me saying this, but his family came on my retreat in London just last week. And his sister, she had cancer. And he told me, and I was so overjoyed, that's why I share these stories with you, that before the retreat, she had 4 tumours in her body, and really aggressive ones as well. And after the meditation, that she had a scan, 2 tumours totally disappeared, and the other 2 reduced by 80% each. And a wonderful thing, and that's just because Ajahn Brahmani, you all know him, he's such a good monk. It's wonderful to be able to do something for your fellow monks by getting his sister into reasonably good health again. How did that work? Because just really learning how to relax the body, being aware of the peace index in the body of your and body and your mind, and learning how just to make this body more and more and more relaxed, make the mind less and less and less stressed. If she went into that retreat and I told her, you just fight that cancer, you get it out, you make sure it doesn't survive, meditate, concentrate, and bash that cancer to bits, she'd have probably got double the amount of tumours in her body by the end of the retreat. But this other way, you can see just how you really relax, and it's amazing just the health benefits that has on your body when you know how to relax through mindfulness and kindness. That works on your body, and you can see that, you can feel that. That's something which is very clear to you. And the same thing works on your mind as well. Your mind gets so relaxed and peaceful and happy that all the frustrations, the anger, the negativity, the depression, and all, especially the anger, starts to disappear. All of those emotional problems, I compare them to another simile I've been developing over the last few months, the simile of a guitar string. If a guitar string is very tight, is stretched on both ends, you pluck it and it makes a high-pitched sound. Once you loosen that guitar string, it makes a lower-pitched sound, a lower-pitched sound. When you really release it from both ends, which are stretching it, you can pluck it, it doesn't make any sound at all. That's just like the human mind. Sometimes we're just so tense that a small thing really makes us upset. We make this high-pitched sound. Ah, what are you doing that for, husband? This is not right. And the more relaxed you get, the more the sound gets a lower pitch. That was not a sensible thing you did, wife. But when you get really relaxed, you don't say anything. Because whatever happens in life, nothing makes your brain resonate. Anger, ill will, negativity, grief, fear, guilt, all of that vanishes when your mind relaxes. You can't get any sound out of a guitar string when it's totally loose. So when your mind becomes really relaxed, somebody bangs the door, it's already gone. The sound doesn't resonate in your brain. Why did she bang the door? Why can't people be more considerate? Why can't we have doors which don't bang? All those sorts of things, the banging of the door finished a long time ago, but it keeps resonating in your mind simply because you're too tight, too tense. Like something hitting a guitar string, it keeps resonating. When the guitar string is really loose, it doesn't resonate at all. So learning how to relax and make the mind very peaceful, you find nothing much happens in your brain. It can actually relax and rest. Now some people think, well, if it relaxes and rests, you don't get anywhere. You have to strive to get somewhere, but that's not how meditation works. When you start to relax, you find your energy starts to increase. And with it, your mindfulness gets more powerful. Simply because you're not doing anything. It's just like when you don't spend any money, the amount of money in your bank account increases. Interest. And that's just like what happens in the brain. When you don't strive and think and do stuff, you're not wasting energy. And the energy doesn't stay the same. The energy actually increases. So the more you are still, the more you let go, the more relaxed you are, the more energized you become. And that is an important part of the meditation which I teach here. People think, oh, it's just too slack, you just let go, you're not supposed to do anything, just to be no matter what happens. If you're tired, go to bed and have a sleep. You know, if you're tired here, you can just allow your head to nod. Don't put too much effort into things. If you want to sleep for the first few days, that's fine. Just make sure that you remember to get up for breakfast and go to bed afterwards, and then get up for lunch, and then go to bed and have a nap until afternoon tea, and afternoon tea, go to bed again. What a waste of time. It's not a waste of time. If that's what you need, give yourself that. And you will find the energies in your body and in your mind will increase naturally. There comes a time when you don't want to sleep so much because you've made up the sleep deficit. There comes a time when your mind is, it doesn't get sleepy anymore. It's got its own natural resource of energy starting. Stillness, rest, relaxation, letting go, doing nothing is a source of energy. And hopefully you'll discover that, which is an important part of meditation. Sometimes you're so still here, hardly anything's going on in your mind, and you don't fall asleep, you wake up. You get high energy states, big smiles on your faces. Mindfulness so strong, you look at the floor and you can see 1,000 different colours in just one of the planks of bamboo on which you're sitting. You're waking up because you're energizing. This is what meditation is supposed to do. Energizing the body, energizing the mind through stillness, not through effort. Sometimes that people think they need to get effort to get things, but not in meditation. Stillness gives more energy. When there's more energy, there's more mindfulness. When there's more mindfulness, you can actually see how this mind works. And you can actually guide it into even more still states. And then you get into incredible, beautiful states of mind. Energized and happy. I can't understand why people meditate and they pay so much money and take so much time to come on a retreat if they're miserable for the whole retreat. Yeah, people say, oh, they're getting something, but they make that up as an excuse because otherwise they'd have to tell all their friends they spent so much money on just wasting their time. So people always, you know what sometimes people say after a retreat? Well, I learned a lot on this retreat. That's meditation code for you wasting time and didn't get anywhere. I learned a lot, you said. You didn't learn anything. You just wasted your time and just strived too much. But there comes a time when the happiness starts to come on this retreat. And that, for me as a teacher, is what I wish for every one of you on this retreat. You start to have some really beautiful meditations, happy meditations, joyful ones. Wow, this is really nice. Where does that come from? You follow the instructions, you've been letting go, being peaceful, and the peaceful index really goes way down to 1 to 1.5. Really still, really peaceful. And with that comes huge energies and happiness as well. Just the joy of meditation. That's how I was trained, that's how I enjoyed myself when I was a monk. As a young monk, as a monk now. That's why I keep doing this. I'm not a masochist. I'm a monk because I'm having fun and enjoy my meditation. And it's just a wonderful resource. Once you know that any time you're tired, any time it's difficult, you can just sit down, close your eyes and bliss out. And that's what I want for you. And some people say, oh, that's just being attached to happiness. Later on, I'll repeat much of the stuff which I'm saying on this introductory talk. You will find the Buddha said, if you get enjoy and indulge in the happinesses of meditation, all that leads to is stream-winning once returning, non-returning, and arahat. All the things which people strive for and never achieve, you get when you indulge in the happiness of meditation. That's what we're here for. So please, when the meditation gets happy, please enjoy it. Indulge in it. Bliss out. Don't just say, there must be something wrong, I'm enjoying this. That's really crazy. That is very much, you know, it's actually the definition of the puritanical Christianity. Somebody said the definition of puritanism, people like Calvin and those sorts of people used to do, is the fear that somewhere someone is happy. As if there's something wrong with that. Now religion, you're not supposed to be happy in religion. That's what I was taught. I remember going to the Christian churches when I was young. I used to sing in a choir when I was young. It's a way I could get some extra pocket money. I wasn't at all religious. I was just doing it for totally materialistic reasons. Because, you know, a nice little kid, 8 or 9 years of age, looked really cute. And one of my best earners was going to weddings because, you know, the new groom and the bride, and they see these beautiful little kids, you know, singing in the choir, and they were just, you know, really cute, and they really got into their hearts, and they, you know, they give you a tip afterwards. That was a good little earner when you're only 8 or 9 years of age. And that was all mine. I didn't tell my father or mother about that. I said, I'm just going to church this afternoon. They said, okay, off you go. They never realized I was just doing it to earn some money to buy sweets and other stuff. But it was such a boring place because it was so cold and there were just no cushions on the pews, and you listen to the priest and tell him you're going to go to hell no matter what you do. It was just really, really dull and boring, and no one ever smiled or told jokes at all. And that was just a really, really terrible place. There was no happiness, no fun, and no joy in it. And to me, there was something wrong. And even as a young kid, you realize there's something wrong there. It's such a relief, you know, to go to, you know, places like Buddhist temples and see people happy, having a good time. Are you supposed to have a good time as a monk? I thought monks aren't supposed to have fun. Of course not. It's totally the opposite way around. And, of course, it was a great revelation to go and meet some of these great monks in Thailand who were really, really fun to be with. And also told jokes. Here we go. One of the jokes which one of these monks said. This was a monk called Ajahn Sing Tong. And he was staying with one of the fiercest monks, Ajahn Mahabur, in Thailand. Ajahn Mahabur would shout at people. He was just a tough person. But this Ajahn Sing Tong, he got up late one morning. And he missed the morning meeting. And so everyone expected Ajahn Mahabur to shout at him, "You were late for the meeting. You slept in. You lazy, indulgent scallywag." But what this monk, Ajahn Sing Tong, did, he was a Buddhist monk. He knew he was in trouble. He got up too late. So in the forest, he searched around and found a chicken. There's lots of chickens in the forest chickens. And he grabbed it, and he tied a rope around its neck, and he dragged the squawking chicken, you know, to the meeting hall. And there was this monk, you can visualize it, dragging his chicken, squawking his head off, not knowing what was going on, to the meeting hall. And then, you know, all the monks heard that, and then he released it. It wasn't harmed. And then Ajahn Mahabur starts calling him, "What the heck are you doing? And you were late for this morning's meeting. Why were you late?" He said, "What do you mean being late? I arrived, I came before the crow called, or before the chicken crowed." Coming before the chicken was a Thai way of saying you got up early. So he was just telling that joke, and all the monks burst out laughing. And poor Ajahn Mahabur said, "I can't do anything with this monk. Let's go to arms round." So even they would actually crack jokes, and really stupid jokes as well. So there we go, that they had a lot of fun. But what was most important was when I read in the suttas, this is descriptions of the time of the Buddha and how monks were in that time. And there you see in the Dhammadhyata Sutta, the Monuments to the Dhamma it's called, Dhammacetya Sutta, sorry, that there in the Monuments to the Dhamma, King Prasenadi goes to see the Buddha, and he tells the Buddha how much he enjoys coming into this monastery, which was a Jeta Grove monastery, the Jetavana, famous monastery in North India where the Buddha spent most of his range retreats. It's basically his center, his base. And the king said he so enjoyed coming into this monastery. "Why, great king, do you enjoy coming into this monastery?" "Because," said the king, "in this monastery all the monks are smiling and happy." And the Buddha replied, "Yes, king, that's what you can expect when the monks are meditating properly and gaining insights." And that's such a great teaching there. If you're meditating properly and gaining insights, you will be happy and smiling. So, I expect most of you to increase your smile in the next 9 days, otherwise I'm a terrible teacher. If you're not happier than when you came here, you can ask for your money back. That is my promise. You can ask for your money back, but of course you won't get it. But you're always allowed to ask. So anyhow, the happiness is an important part of the meditation. So look for it, encourage it. When it happens, don't throw it away. When the happiness comes, brilliant. And which also means that when you are happy, please smile a lot. In this retreat, it's supposed to be a silent retreat. And the silence means you don't go talking and having conversations with one another. But you know, some people used to complain, oh, just it's so rotten coming on these retreats. No one talks to you. I feel so alone. And people are so miserable. So yes, you don't need to talk to one another, but you can smile. Please smile at one another when you see each other in the morning. Just a little smile just makes all the difference. It means, you know, you care for one another. And that actually changes the whole attitude of the retreat into something which is very pleasant, welcoming and kind. So yeah, don't talk to one another, but you are allowed to smile at one another. And of course, if somebody speaks to you, what do? You can't go and tell them to shut up because then you are speaking too. So I always tell people, give them the one finger sign. That's the one finger sign in Buddhism, not the other one finger sign. Which means you just reminded them, don't feel, make them feel terrible or feel that they've made a big mistake. You're just reminding them just to be quiet. Which means that it doesn't disturb you and it's helping them. Of course, if there is something to be said, I always have to repeat this every retreat, it's going to be warm in a few more days' time. Don't think it's cold now. This is, you know, a bit strange in November. It's usually much warmer than this. If there is fire season and there's a fire coming, please do not keep noble silence if you see a fire. Don't try and mime it. Just say, fire, get out, quick. There is a time for noble silence and there's a time for speaking. So don't be stupid with noble silence. And that means that we're encouraging people, looking after one another, being peaceful, being kind, and allowing this meditation to get very, very deep and very powerful. Yes, I do get invited to teach in many places throughout the world. Because this meditation method, trick, is incredibly powerful. You get people into very deep meditations, happy meditations. If you haven't been in a deep meditation before, you've got a really good chance of getting it on this retreat, as long as you follow the instructions. So please be kind to your body. Be kind to your mind. Don't try and get something. Stop all this achieving stuff. Instead, let go. Be content. Be peaceful. Second factor of the Eightfold Path. Just let go. Be kind. Be gentle. Or, what you'll hear me say again, it's almost like a summary of what you're going to hear in the next few days. The two types of meditation, Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. Second Noble Truth is wanting is the cause of suffering. So if you want to get something in your meditation, you're just asking for suffering. And if you're disappointed, frustrated, it's because you wanted something. You're suffering. It's called Second Noble Truth Meditation. Such a simple teaching, but people keep forgetting it. They want to get peaceful, they want to get rid of their defilements, they want to sit for longer periods of time. You're asking for suffering. That's what the Buddha said, wanting is the cause of suffering. And the end of wanting, letting things be, letting go of wanting and craving, is called Third Noble Truth. It leads to peace, happiness, nibbana. Nibbana, the highest happiness, the paramang sukha. So if you learn how to let go, just to be relaxed, not to want anything, to put aside all these goals, then when you don't want anything, your mind becomes so peaceful and still. It stays in the present moment. When you don't want anything, you can really enjoy what you already have. That great saying which summarizes the Four Noble Truths. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. So you're taking away all possibility of happiness when you want something. So just learn how to be. Be still, be here, in this moment, with this old body, with this old mind. Just be here. Don't want anything. That is Third Noble Truth meditation. And that, said the Buddha, leads to enlightenment. And on the way, to huge amounts of peace and joy and bliss. So all wanting is the problem. Please remember that, and the meditation becomes so simple and so effective. Of course, people say, well, I didn't want anything, but I'm not enlightened yet. You did want something, that's why you're frustrated and disappointed. And also, you have to be patient as well. And to understand patience, two types of patience in the world. The first type of patience is waiting for something to happen. That's called waiting in the future. That's not what real patience is. If you're waiting for something to happen, that is still, again, second noble truth, wanting something. Real patience is waiting in this moment, not wanting anything, just being here. If you can do that, just be in this moment, waiting in the present moment, not wanting anything in the whole world, just happy to be here, content, then that builds and builds and builds and builds. And you experience that. The mind energizes, the body feels great, meditation just happens, beautiful breath, bliss, nimittas, jhanas, the whole work's happened. Just when you let go of craving and wanting. So that is a brief summary of what we're doing in this retreat. Of course, I'll be repeating that, because the only way to brainwash you is to keep repeating it over and over and over just to get it into your head. I say all of this in the first talk of the evening because you are tired, and therefore I can get underneath your radar, underneath your protection, and really brainwash you powerfully. Tomorrow when you wake up and get more energy, you'll have more resistance. So that's why I'm messing around with your head right now. But it does work, you have great meditation. So, there we are. That's just introductory talk. Welcome to Jhana Grove. Peaceful, kind, letting go. Have a wonderful time, and we'll see what happens. Don't worry about even the time. You're just starting. It'll only be a moment. You open your eyes, and we're just doing the last meditation of the retreat. It goes so fast when you're living in the present moment. So just enjoy as much as you can. So, usually at the end of the talk, just to give you some energy, we do the three Ajahn Brahm sadhus. And which means, because this again, Ajahn Chah told me, whatever you do, give it everything you've got. Full power. So even though you might be tired, three big sadhus. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu! And that makes it a much happier time. I've been to some places, and after the talk, sadhu, sadhu. And it's so depressing, I want to go and kill myself. But three big sadhus reaching lots of energy and happiness, which is what this retreat is all about. So, have a nice night, everybody. Anyone, any of the smart addicts who want to sit up here all night, you can do. It's a bit of a waste of time. Most of the wise people will do what I call flat-out meditation on your first night. So please meditate flat-out tonight. You know what flat-out meditation is? Lying flat-out and having a nice rest. If you've got some energy, you're most welcome to use the hall here and to meditate a bit longer. But again, remind people, really important, when you go back into your huts, please do it quietly, because some people will be sleeping, some people will be meditating, staying up a bit later. So just out of concern for everybody and out of compassion for them, please remember to be like a burglar. Okay, good night, everyone. See you in the morning.